coming up on Philosophy Talk.
The philosophy of flirting.
Ah, my little darling, it is love at first sight, is it not? No? Do not come with me to the Casbah. We shall make beautiful music together right here. C'est l'amour. C'est toujours. C'est l'amour.
Of love. You know you don't have to act with me, Steve. You don't have to say anything and you don't have to do anything. Not a thing. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Our guest is Carrie Jenkins, expert flirter and expert philosopher from the University of Nottingham.
The philosophy of flirting, coming up on Philosophy Talk after the news.
Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the studios of KALW in San Francisco.
We're continuing conversations that began at Philosopher's Corner on the lovely Stanford campus.
Our topic today is flirting. Now, in the first part of our story, we're going to try to define flirting. You're at a dinner party. You spend the whole evening in conversation with a very lovely person. Afterwards, your partner angrily accuses you of flirting with that person all night. You insist, you weren't flirting. You were just being friendly. Now, what's the difference between flirting and friendly conversation? Between flirtation and seduction?
After we've answered all those questions, or at least explored them a little bit, we're going to move to the psychology of flirting. Why do people flirt at all? Is it something that evolution bequeathed to us? Do men and women flirt for the same reasons? I mean, there's an old adage that says men flirt for sex, women flirt for attention. Are we the only animals that flirt?
And in our final segment, we'll circle around to ethical questions about flirting. Is it cheating to flirt with somebody other than your partner? Is flirting without intending to take it further a form of dishonesty? Is it all right to flirt your way to the top?
So, Ken, we've got a lot of questions. No doubt some of them are interesting questions. But are any of them philosophical? Somehow I missed out on Aristotle's essay on flirting or Descartes' treatise on flirting. I mean, what does flirting have to do with philosophy?
John, I'm surprised at you. I mean, you're the guy who always says, you always say, you could make philosophy out of anything. Besides, I would have thought this particular topic, flirting, was right up your alley.
You think I'm a flirt, Ken. That's just because every time I see you, I say how cute the dimples that form on your cheeks when you smile are. But actually, you may not know this, but everybody says that, right? Well, that's nothing to do with flirting.
Well, it's not because you're a flirt that I thought it would be interesting to you. It's because you're such an astute and subtle student of human communication. I mean, flirting is a highly sophisticated, highly subtle form of communication, and it raises all sorts of interesting philosophical questions.
Okay, but where does the rubber meet the road here? Give me two philosophical questions that have to do with flirting.
Well, first, exactly what is flirting? I mean, that's kind of puzzling, don't you think? It has something to do with intimations of romance or sex, but not everything that intimates romance or sex is flirting. So what's the difference? What distinguishes flirting from these other kinds of things? What's the essence of flirting?
Yeah, that was a very cheap victory, Ken. I mean, yeah, you can make philosophy out of anything. What's the essence of being a telephone or a cup or a pane of glass or a nose? Is there anything specifically about flirting that's interesting?
Well, it may be cheap, but it's honorable. I mean, philosophers have been doing that sort of thing with concepts since Socrates did it with, the pious back in the Euthyphro. So that's honorable. But there are other puzzling questions. Can you flirt without intending to flirt? Can you flirt without knowing that you're flirting? Can you try to flirt but fail? I mean, is there a difference between good flirting and bad flirting? Those are philosophical questions.
Well, that kind of connects with what you suggested earlier, that flirting is a form of communication. Now, in communication, we usually intend to do something in part because our intention to do that very thing is recognized. We owe that insight to H.P. Grice, a great philosopher. So there's something interesting about flirting. It's a form and probably a particularly interesting form of communication.
Right, and you know, you can do it well or badly, subtly or crudely, and to prove that point, we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Polly Stryker, out into the wild to get some real examples of native flirters in action. She files this report.
If you flirt, it's because you want something, right? It might be sex, but maybe you want an ego boost. Or to sweeten a business deal. I hit a bar scene on Saturday night to talk to people on the hunt about why they flirt and how they do it.
When you flirt, you are trying to pick up on somebody and romance them and woo them into your arms and get them to fall madly in love with you.
Of course I like to flirt. I'm looking at you right now. I'm smiling at you. Good Lord, isn't that flirting?
Well, how do I flirt? It depends on the person. I flirt with women and men, and I love all gorgeous things.
Flirting has always been the same, you know. It's just like usually girls would say, what's up? You know, I like you. Actually, it might have changed back then because then there might be a note pass. People still pass notes, but they just do it verbally.
And I'm not talking about flirting so that you end up in bed with someone. No. I'm talking about the art of contact, of saying, oh, you look nice.
Flirting online, you know, people go into chat rooms because, you know, you're anonymous. No one knows what you look like. You can put up a fake picture if there are pictures. You can make up a fake identity. You can make a fake name. You know, you can be whatever you want to be. This is some sort of virtual fantasy idealized forum. But then it totally takes out the actual body language.
Flirting has changed significantly. I have some clients who are, I'm a psychotherapist. They're 10 years old and they dress really provocatively and they try to seduce the teenagers who come in from high school to teach them.
I MC a lot of shows and I kind of do a lot of flirting with the audience within that. Maybe not in totally sexual or sensual ways, but certainly a lot of flirting with the audience psychologically, emotionally, to bring them in, you know, because I think that's what a lot of flirting is like kind of like opening something up and bringing someone in. You know, it's got bookends on it, like you can have this interaction and then leave it at that. I think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, one time I was wearing these fishnet arm things. And this guy came up and he tore them open and he wrote his name and his number on my arm, all across my arm in like Sharpie. I was so offended, I never spoke to him again.
In the context that someone's asking or saying that I'm being a flirt, I would have to say that would probably mean to me that I'm probably being too domineering and also that I'm probably thinking about too much of one thing and not enough of another.
People don't look at each other's eyes anymore. Today everything is, too sexy, too this, too that, too explicit.
I gotta flirt with you right now, is that all right? Hey, this is going miserably. Are you enjoying this flirting? I'm very robotic about my flirting.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Polly Stryker.
Okay, Tuesday night I'll take you out and I'll tell you more about this. How's that?
I'm John Perry. With me is Ken Taylor.
And our guest is Carrie Jenkins. She's professor of philosophy at Nottingham University in England and also a research fellow at the Australian National University. She's author of a provocative article, The Philosophy of Flirting, that got this topic started. Carrie, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hi there.
Hi, Carrie. Now, you know, we missed our chance to interview Heraclitus about change. We missed our chance to interview Plato about justice. We missed our chance to interview Hume about induction. Each of those great philosophers founded a problem, but died, inconveniently for us, long before we got around to interviewing them. But with you, you're a first. You're the philosopher who's starting a new problem, which will probably last for millennia. And we get to talk to you about Philosophy Talk. So how did you get interested in this topic of flirting?
Well, you know, it's quite a cute story. So my partner and I, we're both philosophers.
Oh,
we
dear.
Both work at Nottingham. Yeah. one evening we were at a philosophy conference in Lisbon. And we had decided we would go out for dinner by ourselves. It was quite early in the relationship, you know. And so we decided we'd go to this lovely Italian restaurant. We were having a candlelit meal. Any two normal people would be getting on with doing some flirting. But we're both philosophers. What we were doing was we decided we had to analyze flirting. We had to work out what it was, what it would be to do some flirting, and see if we could come up with a view.
So you were flirting by meta-flirting, as it were?
Exactly. We were flirting by talking about flirting. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, only philosophers do this.
So subsequently you wrote an article, and what did you come up with? How do you define flirting?
Yeah, so that's right. So I think it's all about intentions and attitudes and beliefs. The intentions, attitudes, and beliefs of the person doing the flirting. So let me just talk about intentions for a bit and talk about a particular example which might help to motivate the distinction I want to draw here. So I hear that if you go to Italy, particularly if you're female, I think, then if you fiddle with your earlobes there, that can be interpreted as a sexual come on. So imagine that you're someone who doesn't know this, and you go to Italy and you sit around and you fiddle with your earlobes a lot in the presence of one particular young man. Then that, without any intention, of course, of giving these kind of signals, that, I think, is not a case of flirting, because you don't have the right intentions. So I want to call it a case of flirtatious behavior, where that just means, you know, in that social context, it's likely to be interpreted that way. It's sort of a conventional way of flirting. But you could display this flirtatious behavior without flirting because you didn't have the right intentions.
So you can't flirt without the intention to flirt. Do you have to also intend that the flirtee will recognize your intention to flirt?
I think you have to believe something about your flirtee. You have to think that they're capable of responding in some way. Well, it might not be the way you want.
Well, right. That's right. I mean, 2 points about that. I mean, I'm going to use a made-up example. Take a crude teenage boy.
That's mm-hmm. not made up,
Ken. Yeah. That's a crude teenage boy who wants to flirt with a lovely teenage girl. Yeah. Right? And right. He thinks, for some strange reason, that if he moons her, that'll turn her on. So
I've
he moons her. Yeah. He moons her. Now, was he intended to, you know, do something? He raised intimations of romance or sex, but did he flirt with her? But I mean, he had the right kind of intention, but jeepers. Well, what do you think, Gary?
Well, so he might well have done. It depends. So there's a few other conditions that I think he'd have to meet. So one of them is, I don't think you're flirting unless you're being playful in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is the kind of thing that he might
playfully
have done.
Playfully.
Yeah, he playfully mooned her, yeah. And the other thing is, and again, I think he's going to meet this condition, you have to be sort of, there has to be a kind of worldly wiseness about the way you're doing this. So, you know, if you're just playing at romance, you know, say two little kids playing a game of weddings, they're not worldly wise. They're not doing this in the right kind of knowing way. So they're not going to count as flirting either. But this guy, yeah, he might well be just flirting really badly.
So kind of applying speech act theory to this, we might say, well, he's flirting because he intends to flirt, and he intends his intention to flirt be recognized, but he's doing it badly, maybe because the flirtee doesn't even recognize what he's trying to do but thinks he's trying to insult her. Or maybe she recognizes what he's trying to do, but it doesn't have the desired effect. She has no desire to flirt in return, and is
yeah,
just kind of turned off.
I think he's just a crude boor who doesn't know how to flirt. I mean, so I'm not sure he even succeeds in flirting. But, you know, I want our callers. I hope we have lots of callers about this. And you can join us by calling 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. I know we have a lot of experienced flirts in our audience, but So cue up those. But Carrie, let me ask you something else. Okay.
Sure.
About this recognition thing. Do you know this result in psychology about arousal and danger? There's this result. So take a guy in a bridge, a dangerous bridge in a beautiful place, and a woman walks up to him and once says, I'm doing a survey about beautiful places, and he hands him a questionnaire and then gives him her phone number, say, call me back if you have any further thing, okay? And then mm-hmm. she walks up to a guy in a similar setting on a non-dangerous bridge and does exactly mm-hmm. the same thing. The guys on the bridge report being highly attracted to the woman and by and large and are much more likely to call the woman later, right, to uh-huh. follow up, right? And the guys on the secure bridge don't do that sort of stuff. And the guys on the bridge think they're aroused because of her, right? They don't attribute their arousal. Suppose I know this. Suppose I put you on a bridge on our first date, a dangerous bridge, you know, and I intend thereby to arouse no sexual interest in you. Have I flirted with you? I mean, I have the intention of doing something designed to bring about sexual arousal in you. Have mm-hmm. I flirted?
Did you do it playfully?
Yeah. I did it.
Yeah,
playfully.
You might well have done. I mean, this would be a highly unorthodox method, right? It wouldn't be flirtatious behavior in the sense that I defined earlier, right? Because the cultural norms that we work by don't recommend this as a traditional way of flirting. But yeah, I think it might.
I'm going to
well
challenge you on that a bit after the break. I don't think I agree with you. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. Helping us define flirting is Carrie Jenkins from Nottingham University.
Coming up, we're going to look at the psychology of flirting. Can you flirt without intending to? We've talked about that a little. Do men and women flirt for different reasons? Is flirting like an art form or just something that comes natural to sexual beings? What do you think? You can join us by calling toll-free at 1-800-525-9917. I'll repeat, 1-800-525-9917.
The psychology of flirting, plus your calls and emails when Philosophy Talk continues.
What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
Have you ever tried to cook something up with somebody good looking, or somebody not so good looking for that matter? Of course you have. But why? Why did you do it? To get attention? I mean, why do people flirt? Is it really to get sex? To get a promotion for the fun of it? To pass time? This is Philosophy Talk, and I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Tell us your thoughts. The toll-free number again is 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. Or you can email us at comments@philosophytalk.org.
Our guest is Carrie Jenkins from Nottingham University, who's written a provocative article called The Philosophy of Flirting.
So, Carrie, I want to take you back to this intention thing, the playful intention. I'm not sure I agree with you about something, right? If I don't intend...
Why don't you repeat the example?
The example was from the psychology literature, the connection between danger and arousal. If you're in a dangerous situation and an attractive member of the opposite sex approaches you, you'll be more aroused sexually. You'll be sexually aroused by that person, and you'll attribute your arousal to their attractiveness. You'll judge that person more attractive. You're more likely to follow up. If you're similarly situated in a more secure situation where you're not aroused, you won't find that person as attractive. You won't, you know, the psychologists say if you want to take somebody on a first date, put them on a roller coaster with you, and then make your pass, right? Because you're more likely to be successful.
unless they throw up.
But here's the thing. So suppose I intend to put you in a situation that will cause arousal, right? And I do that on purpose, and maybe I do it playfully, but I don't intend to make manifest to you that that's my intention. Have I flirted? It seems to me that I haven't flirted unless I intend to make manifest my intention. What do you think?
That's a good question. And I think that, you know, I think it can you can definitely flirt without intending to make manifest your intention. So, and here's one reason why. So I think you can flirt even though there's nobody there that you're flirting with.
You mean like with the air?
Maybe. So this would be, you would maybe have to believe that there's someone there you're flirting with. But yeah, so supposing, this is a case that it sounds like your view is a little bit more similar to my partner's view of what flirting is than it is to mine. So
We should say that not only did you write a provocative article, that caused your partner to write a provocative article in response. So you guys have cornered the literature.
So what was the main bone of contention that came out of this this flirting exchange?
Well, one of them is that I think it's all down to the intention, attitudes, and beliefs of the flirter. But my partner thinks, Daniel Nolan thinks, that actually lots of things about the flirtee can matter as well. And also things like, you know, how badly you fail in your attempts to flirt. So according to me, you know, it's just a matter of your intentions. And if you try to flirt, you'll pretty much succeed in doing it. He thinks, no, you can try and fail so badly that you didn't flirt at all. You didn't just flirt really badly, which is what I would say. You didn't flirt at all.
So it's a little bit like the debate about insulting. I mean, is insulting something you can do even if there's no uptake at all? I mean, I tell Ken, you know, well, I better not come up with too good an example here. But I say something to someone and they take it as a compliment, but I meant it as an insult. Did I insult them because I intended to, or did I fail to insult because the uptake condition wasn't right?
That's a very good question. If you're Gricean, you think the uptake condition matters, right? But let's let some callers in here at 1-800-525-9917. 7. This is Philosophy Talk, and we're talking about the philosophy of flirting with Carrie Jenkins, kind of the founder of this line of thinking. And our first caller is Guy in Berkeley. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Guy. Guy, are you there? Well, we're having a little technical difficulty. We'll come back to you. We'll come back to callers after we get this straightened out. But let's push this thing about the. I think I agree with your partner, with Daniel Nolan, more than you, Carrie. And I want to press you about this a little bit.
Sure.
Look, I think flirting is kind of a two-step thing. It's kind of a two-step dance. I present myself to you as in some ways available, right? And I thereby invite you, right, to present yourself to me as available too, right? I mean, so it's this two-step thing. So it's very attuned to, if you don't uptake it, I don't know. So tell me what you think.
These are slightly different questions. Yeah. So there's the question of whether there has to be some presentation of yourself as available and some kind of invitation to uptake. And I don't think that's right. So I think you can flirt with people that you know perfectly well. There is no way it's going anywhere. And you are not inviting them to take it anywhere. Right?
Then you're insincere.
You just are having a bit of fun. Not necessarily. Not if they know that's what's going on. So they might get misled by this, but if they know that's what's going on, I don't reckon that's insincere.
I think that's pretend.
Just a bit of fun.
I don't know. I think that's pretend. Apparently our phones are fixed. Guy in Berkeley, okay. Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now. We can hear you now.
Hi. So I haven't thought about this before, so thanks for this, but it seems to me that flirting is more subtle than what your intention allows for, and that you have to allow for unconscious attitudes and intentions. At least in my youth, I was accused of flirting without knowing that I was flirting, and then in retrospect I thought, well, yeah, I guess I was flirting. You know what I mean? Do you allow for intention to be unconscious, I guess is my
Absolutely.
Question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. No, I agree with that 100%, and it can be something that you're not aware of yourself at the time, and maybe you can be brought to recognize it later, but maybe not. That's fine, as long as you have the intention. You know, how accessible the intention is to you, that's a different question. Yeah.
So there's a famous historic case along these lines. It's when our beloved President George Bush walked up behind Angela Merkel, the leader of Germany, and gave her a playful back rub. Yeah. And she seems not to have had the intended uptake at all, because she looked shocked, offended, and insulted. So I guess, I mean, I'm just trying to clarify things here. You'd say he was flirting, but your partner would say, no, he wasn't flirting because the uptake didn't come through.
Oh, no, not necessarily. So Daniel's view isn't that if the uptake doesn't come off, then you haven't succeeded in flirting. But he thinks that if your attempt is so bad that you should have known there was no way it was going to work, then you won't have succeeded.
Right, right. So the guy with the mooning guy.
The mooning guy, exactly.
Would be
cases
case
like
of
that.
Failed, an attempt to flirt, but a failure
a failed
to flirt.
Attempt.
I think adjusting for age and the situation, Bush and the mooning guy are pretty equivalent.
Yeah. Tim in San Francisco's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. You touched a little bit on what I wanted to raise was the difference between flirting and being a tease.
Right.
And, you know, is it dishonest? But there has to be allowance for not wanting it to go anywhere, and it does just feel good. But sometimes I haven't liked being told by someone else that I was flirting when I didn't think I was, and when I reflected later, you know, I wasn't even, you know. But I could see where someone would say, well, they thought I was. So I guess the question is like right and wrong of the situation that I'd like some comment on, you know, like intergenerational flirting where, you know, there's not an intent or just one comment on someone, you know, someone's beautiful eyes. You know, is that always, I mean, always is a word to stay away from, but is that always flirting? And when it's offensive to one person but not to the person who's receiving it,
yeah.
You know, who gets to define
Jim,
it?
Jim, you've asked lots of interesting questions. We're going to, some of them we're going to delve into more deeply in the third part of the story. But I want to cue up just one of them for you right now, Carrie. The thing about the distinction between a flirt and a tease, right? It seems to me, and I don't know if this goes for or against your approach, that a tease is a person who engages as if to flirt, That is, as if to invite uptake without any intention that there be uptake. Or when the uptake happens, it kind of recoils, right? So how does that fit with your approach? How would you distinguish in your approach between a flirt and a tease?
That could be right. I'd want to add a little bit to that, because I don't think it's... So you remember this case I mentioned earlier where everybody knows it's not going anywhere and you're just having a bit of fun. I don't reckon that is teasing, right? Because nobody's going to... The person you're flirting with isn't going to be led on or misled in any way. You know, teasing sounds more like they are going to think that there's something, that something's possible here, and it turns out that actually it's not, and if they were to try and take it any further, you'd stop them. But there are some cases where you're flirting and you're not intending to take it any further, but you're still not teasing because everyone knows that's what's going on.
Here's an email from Shantice in San Francisco. She says, as an expert on flirting, I find this conversation leaves out the role of humor in flirting. Well, it's not quite fair because Carrie has mentioned that it ought to be playful. But anyway, she continues. Humor between two attractive individuals can fire the loins. Can we say that on radio?
We just
fire
did.
Fire the loins and create a magnetic atmosphere. Take care, Shantice, flirting expert and registered clinician. Okay.
So, Carrie, what do you think about Shantice's expertise?
Well, I absolutely agree that humor is really important for this. It's so as you said, I mentioned the need for it to be playful, and obviously one of the really key ways that something can be playful is if you introduce an element of humor. So I do think humor is really important. Yeah.
Donna in Palo Alto, let's get some more female perspectives here. We've had lots of guys talking. Donna in Palo Alto's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Donna.
Hi. My car alarm is going off.
Can you turn that off for us, Donna?
Your car is very excited by our program.
Yeah. Your car is aroused.
Okay, here we go. So I was wondering about your thoughts on whether or not you think flirting can be learned or if it's just innate. And the reason I wonder about this is because of something I've seen in my own family. We have two boys, and they're both very different. And the baby, he's now three, he's been flirting since he was about 1.5.
Yeah.
And my older son is a lot more like my husband. He's very linear. He's very concrete. He's very sincere. And he's loving, but he just doesn't have that flirting capacity that I think myself and my baby have.
Thanks, Donna, for the great call. There's lots of stuff there. And, you know, we're talking philosophy, but there's a ton of sort of anthropology and psychology and flirting. And, it's universal. And all humans do it, and most psychologists think of it as continuous with, you know, animal mating behavior. And so there's kind of deep evolutionary reasons. So we're all prepared to do it. I mean, learning to do it in a particular context with skill, that's another thing. I think that's certainly true. And one other point just before I ask you to respond, Carrie, is that, you know, that thing you talked about Italy, about pulling your ear. Some psychological literature I read acknowledges that there are cultural variations, but there's a lot of universals. Looking at someone deeply in the eye in any culture has sexual connotations. So anyway, respond to whatever you want to respond to, Carrie.
Oh, well, I just I'll second some of those things you said there. I think, you know, the instinct may well be innate. The skills are definitely learnt. Lots of aspects of this are going to depend on your personality, too. So, you know, if you're a playful kind of person, I think that's probably going to make you more likely to be flirty in a lot of situations. And that, who knows that, you know, to the extent to which that's a nature thing and the extent to which it's a nurture thing. But it could well be that there are aspects of both that play into that.
So John from Berkeley sends us an email that makes a couple points. First, he says, Kierkegaard discussed flirting at length in Either Or, especially in the voice of the aesthetic author. Now, I must admit, that had slipped my mind.
Yeah. So you weren't the first, Carrie.
So you'll just have to
I'm
go down
devastated.
To history. You have to go down history as the one that brought the subject into analytical philosophy. Now, he continues. He says, Don Juan is one of these aesthetic subjects. Here is a figure in the Don Giovanni incarnation who counted 1,003 as his successful seductions. This suggests that we're 1,003 to the power of 10 flirtations. Wow. But was every flirtation designed to raise his total? So, philosophical question. Is flirting a subclass of seduction?
Well, that's a good question. How do you distinguish seduction from...
It'd have to be a subclass of attempted seduction, right?
Yeah, how do you distinguish seduction from flirtation? Carrie, how
seduction
do you do
has a success element, right?
Yes.
If you seduce someone, you got somewhere.
Right.
Flirting doesn't, right? You might flirt and get nowhere.
But an attempted flirtation is not necessarily an attempted seduction.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what's the difference?
Well, and even a successful flirtation isn't necessarily a seduction or attempted seduction. So I think, a seduction, that could be a perfectly serious matter, right? There might be no element of playfulness at all. And there could be, it could happen, you could even kind of have no particular intentions to do this and still, accidentally you've seduced someone. Suddenly they are in bed with you.
And I don't think there's much of an argument that the I think on the flirtation side, the flirtation has to work through this Gricean, recognizing intention. There, you and I might disagree. But on the seduction side, it doesn't have to work. It can be completely surreptitious, right?
Yeah, I don't think the relation is subclass. I think flirting is something that may often be involved in seduction. But they're kind of... they're kind of different things. Now, another issue that we probably shouldn't get into is what counts as successful seduction. I happened to be reading Cosmo Jr. the other day while waiting for one of my granddaughters to do something, and they had a long article about what different ages of kids mean by successful hooking up. But I'll just leave that to one side.
We'll tell you. And we'll tell you that you're listening to Philosophy Talk. Our guest is Kerry Jenkins from Nottingham University, and we're talking about the flirtation, right?
We've been talking about the psychology of flirting, but now we're going to, in a minute, we're going to dig into the ethical issues, right and wrong. What are the right and wrongs when people flirt?
Yeah, give us more calls and emails. They've been a lot of fun. 1-800-525-9917 or email us at comments@philosophytalk.org. The philosophy of flirting, the ethics of it, when Philosophy Talk continues.
Now we're going steady and I'll never, never let you go.
When you're in a committed relationship, is it okay to flirt with other people? If you flirt without intending to carry it further, is that dishonest? Is it okay to flirt as a way of getting a promotion? Ethical questions. That's what we're going to tackle in this part of Philosophy Talk. I'm John Perry, and this is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. And I'm Ken Taylor. Our guest today is Kerry Jenkins, author of the provocative article, The Philosophy of Flirting. And we've got a caller in the line now. Caesar in Oakland's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Caesar.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, how are you? What's your comment or question?
My question is, well, I just picked my friend up and...
You mean as in a bar? You picked her up and...
No, just picked her up off the street. She was walking and I saw her and I said, get
her. Even worse.
Yeah, I was getting worse.
Okay, anyway, see that.
And she asked me if her jeans were too tight because she was going on an interview. And I said, well, probably not. You know, maybe it's a form of flirtation and you can, you know, work that a little bit and maybe get the job that way. And she's like, well, the person who's interviewing me is gay. It's a gay man. So I was wondering if flirting can be successful even though the other person is obviously not going to be sexually interested in you.
I think to answer that question, I'd need to know more about how tight her jeans were. But...
But Kerry, what do you think? I mean, she can intend to bring attention to her lovely curvaceous body, right, by wearing these tight jeans. But if the guy on the other end, if the person on the other end isn't going to have uptake, is she flirting or what's she doing?
Yeah, so she might well be flirting and unfortunately for her, the flirt might not work. The guy's not interested. It's not actually going to make him more likely to give her the job than he might have been otherwise. And so if that was what she was using the flirtation for, there would have been a failure in that sense. But I don't think there would have been necessarily a failure to flirt. If she knew... So suppose she knows before she goes to the interview that the guy who's going to be interviewing her is gay, then I think that might make it less likely that her decision to wear these trousers counts as flirtatious. Counts as an act of flirtation.
Yeah. Well,
because she probably is no longer going to have the intentions that would be required because she knows it's not going to work.
So now, to be wrong, I guess flirtation would have to be voluntary and intentional. But we have an interesting email from Robert. He says, if Darwin was right about sexual selection, a lot of flirting done has to be involuntary. Could you comment on, for example, signs of supplicant behavior in animals like wagging a tail, which birds and mammals do, can be mimicked or genetic detritus. Detritus, sorry about that, in humans who shake their butts. who have what do we say nowadays? A lot of junk in the trunk.
Yeah. I don't say that. But look, I think this is a great question. I mean, because evolutionarily, it's surely all sexual animals mate. Right, and they have these elaborate mating behaviors that's designed to bring attention to themselves, right, and to focus mm-hmm. attention on them. I mean, you don't want the other to reproduce with that one. You want them to reproduce with you, right? So, I mean, there's all this elaborate behavior. Surely, humans flirt as part of that complicated. They have the propensity to flirt as part of that complicated mating dance, but it doesn't follow that it's just hard. I mean. There's a lot more that's going on. We've got a frontal cortex that gets involved in this. So we've got this lower mm-hmm. brain that just is instinctive, and then we've got the frontal cortex that interacts with that and makes this highly sophisticated, highly subtle form of activity.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, eating certainly has some evolutionary explanation. It's a very good way to get nutrition and survive, but that doesn't mean that there can't be immoral eating. I mean, just going and grabbing the bagel off somebody else's plate is still wrong. So flirtation can be kind of deeply... evolved behavior that we share with other animals, but still the question of this segment is it right or wrong to flirt?
Yeah, Carrie, what do you think?
I agree. So I think that, you know, there may be an underlying instinct which drives us to do some of these things, but they really ought to be under our control.
Yeah. Tina in Bolimas is on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk. What's your comment or question?
Thank you. March Piercy has a poem, "I've Always Been Poor at Flirting," in which she's addressing exactly this issue of intention. And her point is, you know, if all we're doing is manipulating each other and trying to out-power trip each other, that isn't her idea of loving behavior, and that for her, you know, attraction is a walking forward with open hands. And that's certainly always been... My problem with flirting is that it has more to do with manipulation than straightforwardness.
So Tina, just a slight digression here, and I don't mean to flirt, but you sound like a very educated and erudite and interesting person. Are you one of those ex-hippies about my age that lives in Bolinas?
Probably.
Well, Tina, thanks a lot for the question. Look, I wanted to make a distinction, Carrie, and see if you look. I think when you talk about speech acts, as we were earlier, you know, things we do with words, and flirting doesn't just have to be words, but words mm-hmm. add spice,
absolutely.
Right? There, and we talk about intention. When you're talking about a speech act, there's kind of the internal intention that helps define the act itself, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a kind of external. Intention. Philosophers have fancy terms for this. When they talk about the illocutionary intention and the perlocutionary intention. I warn you, right? By warning you, I'm trying to get you to move. That's mm-hmm. trying to get you to move away. It's something external to the communicative act. Well, flirting has kind of internal intentions built into it. That's mm-hmm. to raise sex or romance to salience or something like that. But there are also external intentions to get power over you, to play with your emotions or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Don't you think that's a helpful distinction in light of Tina's comments?
Absolutely. So, you know, the things I said earlier were just trying to get hold of, you know, what flirtation actually is. And it's a very interesting, but I think a further question, what can flirtation be used for? And I think that's where the question of these, what you're calling external or maybe secondary goals is going to come in at the point of saying, you know, what do people flirt for? Why do they do this? What are they trying to achieve? And is it moral to do that?
So in terms of what happens, it sounds like between you and your partner, who
Daniel Nolan
and Ken and there's kind of a lot of agreement about what happens. Like there's the flirter who intends to engage the conversation, intends to flirt, probably has sex or at least attention on the mind, at least playing with it. Then there's mm-hmm. the flirtee, and the flirtee, you know, can or cannot have various kinds of uptake. And then there can mm-hmm. be further goals, like to impress the flirtee with your cleverness or to get a promotion. So the question mm-hmm. isn't kind of what happens, but how much of that counts as flirtation.
Right.
Is it, as Ken puts it or as Austin put it, is an illocutionary act, something you do in speaking, whether anyone notices or not, or is it perlocutionary, depends on the uptake of the person you're flirting
yeah,
with.
Yeah, and then the ethical issues are interesting in this way, right? Because suppose I flirt with somebody, and I really do flirt with them, but I have no intention, say, perlocutionary intention, external intention, of getting them into bed. Mm-hmm. Now my spouse complains that I was flirting with that person all night. And I said, yeah, but mm-hmm. It was just playful. Is that a good mm-hmm. defense to her accusation? Because I really didn't intend to carry it very far. And why should she be bothered if I don't, intend to take it any further?
In other words, is flirting kind of okay depending on the further
right.
intentions?
What do you think, Carrie?
I think this is a question that can't be settled once and for all for everybody. I think it depends a lot on your circumstances. So some people in some relationships, I think, would be fine with that. Other people, maybe you have a kind of implicit understanding, or one of you at least thinks there's an implicit understanding that, regardless of your intentions to take it further, it's not respectful to each other if you flirt with other people outside the relationship. So, it depends on what's been agreed between the two partners and what they expect of each other. In some situations, it might be absolutely fine, a bit of harmless fun. In other situations, it might be doing a lot of damage.
But a word of wisdom from the older to the younger people out there in the world. If you fall in love with someone because they're such a good flirt and because it's really such a fascinating thing about them, the way they're constantly flirting, don't expect them to change.
Yeah, right. Well, let's get one last caller in here. Roberta in Richmond's on the line. You'll be our last caller.
Hi. My question really is, if your intention is to connect for your own pleasure, in a way, to another person so that you feel engaged and alive from human connection, which could go somewhere, could not go somewhere, is that flirting also? Where the object of it is the connection.
What do you think, Carrie? Thanks a lot, Roberta.
Not necessarily. I think there are a lot of, very deep and, important connections that we make with other people, which have nothing to do with sex or romance. Just a very intimate, friendly connection. And attempting to make those sorts of connections need have nothing to do with flirtation at all, I think.
I think that's a good point, this point about human connection. I mean, maybe with some kinds of people, the only way to connect is flirting. I mean, I suppose if I ran into Paris Hilton at a dinner party and I wanted to start up a conversation, I mean, what would I say?
Yeah.
What do you think of Dostoevsky?
Let me try another one on you guys. Really, really briefly. Let me try another one on you. Suppose I start flirting with somebody. I thereby invite them to flirt back with me. They take up that invitation and they start flirting with me, and I decide, ooh, I don't like this guy so much or gal so much after all. Have I done something wrong? I mean, I've issued the invitation, the other took up the invitation, and then is that like inviting them to the party, inviting them to the dance, and when they get to the dance, not letting them in?
So
what do you think,
kind
Carrie?
Of a semi-contractual
I'd say you
commitment.
Have the,
Go ahead,
I'd say
Carrie.
You have the prerogative to change your mind.
Well, without sanction, without any kind of disappointment or anything on their part?
Well, there might well be disappointment, but I think, these kinds of interactions with people, they have to be, you have to have in order for this to be morally okay, there has to be consent on both sides, and if you just find out that it's gone too far for one person, then they have the right to withdraw from it. That seems fine to me.
So somebody at a party comes up to me and says, wow, are you that guy on Philosophy Talk with that mellifluous voice? I find it so sexy. And I give her a big smile, but there's a piece of spinach hanging from my tooth, and I also have bad breath. And she takes a hike.
That's all right.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Well, Carrie, on that note, I'm going to have to thank you for joining us. It's been a great pleasure.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks very much.
Our guest has been Carrie Jenkins, professor of philosophy from Nottingham University and a research fellow at the Australia National University, author of a provocative foundational article called The Philosophy of Flirting. So, John, what did you learn today?
Well, one thing I learned is we have a lot of phone calls and emails. People like this kind of topic. We ought to figure out what kind of topic it was. We had a very interesting email we didn't get to that brought up the analogy between flirting and dancing. I just want to mention because maybe some of our listeners can think about that. So I found, as usual, I was right. It's fun to philosophize about anything.
Right, right. And, it turns out, I think it's true. Human beings have honed the art of mate selection and the pre-dance of mating to a fine and subtle art form, and psychologists study it, anthropologists study it. Why shouldn't philosophers study it? I mean, there's really a lot of cool stuff to think about, all this Gricean or non-Gricean. So I think it's really a cool topic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, why would I have thought initially, or at least pretended to think, that in, you know, all these things that came out of the Speech Act, insulting, promising, an umpire calling someone safe or out, these are all things that philosophers have gotten very intrigued about because they have to do with the nature of Speech Act theory, doing things by speaking. Why would flirting not be as interesting? I guess I thought, it must be trivial because it has this sexual connotation.
Right. But it turns out not to be trivial. This conversation, you know, continues on our blog. I already have a blog up there, and our guest, Carrie Jenkins, has promised to blog on this topic as well. So we should get a lively discussion going. I noticed you haven't blogged for a while, so maybe you'll blog on this one because it's a hot topic.
I haven't blogged for a while, but I've been working hard on pragmatics. That's the part of philosophy that looks at speech acts and all those things. So it would be disgraceful if I don't blog.
Okay, I'm going to.
That's not a promise. That's just a
statement.
Statement of fact.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, for the final word on all of this, the absolutely final word, we're going to turn to one of history's biggest flirts, the biggest flirt of all in the philosophical realm, Ian Scholes, the 60-second philosopher.
Ian Scholes, in Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, there's concern that Lydia Bennet might, quote, at 16 be the most determined flirt that ever made herself and her family ridiculous. A flirt, too, in the worst and meanest degree of flirtation, and from the ignorance and emptiness of her mind, wholly unable to ward off any portion of that universal contempt which her rage for admiration will excite, unquote. Harsh words. And that's from the days when folks supposedly knew how to flirt. But did anybody ever flirt well? Scarlett O'Hara's flirtatiousness leaned toward the coquettish, didn't it? Bogart and Bacall, more repartee than flirting. How about James Bond and Miss Moneypenny? I don't know if you can call what they did flirting, a little too much innuendo. So what is flirting? It's somewhere between a quick wink and a sweet nothing. If seduction is trying to cross a threshold, flirting is trying to figure out if there's a doorway or not. Flirting should be mutual, otherwise it's annoying. I have witnessed inept flirting, which isn't really flirting at all. Hey, how you ladies doing? Does not qualify as flirting. It's blundering. The fact that it pays off sometimes is frankly depressing. Flirting should be playful and shouldn't necessarily lead to anything. I once spent a very lovely evening backstage at a benefit flirting with a lesbian folk singer. We both got to practice our flirtation skills with absolutely no expectations from either of us. It was great. You should not expect anything from flirtation because once you do, it quickly turns into something else. Rejection, acceptance, harassment, sex, a relationship, restraining orders. Yes, flirtation can lead to wedded bliss. It can also lead to your coming home at 3 in the morning to find that your erstwhile beloved has made a bonfire of your personal belongings in the front steps. Don't tell me it hasn't happened to you. A man can never be a flirt. He can be flirty, but never a flirt. If a man is too flirty, he will become perceived as a wolf, a philanderer, a seducer, a trifler. And an overly flirtatious woman can quickly graduate to vamp or vixen. If a vixen hooks up with a wolf, look out. Flirting will fly out the window and give way to insinuating banter and eventually pillow talk. And remember, a man can womanize, but a woman can never manize. If flirting still goes on, who does not flirt? Generals do not flirt. Nuns do not flirt. Business tycoons do not flirt. Entrepreneurs can flirt, some of them. Firemen can flirt, but never policemen. Philosophers? Not until the nature of flirting has been defined precisely. And me? I'm not much good at flirting. I have been called a cad, a bounder, and a rake, however. Love your shoes. Can I buy you a drink? I gotta go.
Ian Scholes, the only man who can solve a philosophical problem in 60 seconds.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Manila Productions and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University. Copyright 2007.
Our executive producer is David Demarest.
Special thanks go to Devin Strolovich, Neil Van Leeuwen, Zoe Corneli, and Mark Stone.
Philosophy Talk is sponsored in part by Powell's City of Books.
On the web at powells.com.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from various groups at Stanford University.
Also from the Friends of Philosophy Talk and the members of KALW Local Public Radio San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
The conversation continues on our website, www.philosophytalk.org. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.